Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Franz on the line, Apple Scripted, and Buzz Weed from Sports Mockery. Great to have you guys on the show. How you guys doing?
Living it up, you know, just losing sexy the last few games here, as I like to call it, and keeping the tank alive, but seeing some progress. It's nice to see.
Good, Keith.
Instead of the winning ugly mantra from the White Sox back in the day, it is losing ugly. I love that. We got to put that on a T-shirt.
Losing ugly, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, this is a good thing that happened, and I thought they were pretty competitive for most of the game, and then, you know, where they really lost the game, which is where the second unit came in. I've kind of had it. I know Baby Heinrich, Ryan Archinon, the NBA, is beloved by the fan base, and I know everybody thinks he's great, and he tries real hard. The guy's, he's not an NBA player. He's, I think his last 18 games, he's shooting back to where he was, right? You know, 32% from the field. I think he's around 27% from three. You know, just horrific numbers that indicate he's not long for this league. What say you guys?
But did you see him jump into the stands like Rodman? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. All that heart, all that grit. Give me a break, man. Give me a break. The guy sucks. Nobody guards him. And, you know, and I know every time I tweet a negative about this guy, it's unbelievable. Like, I lose Twitter followers. You can see, like, 10, 15 people just peel off it every time I say that. But I got to be honest. I got to state the truth. The guy, the reason he was doing so well earlier in the year was because he was shooting 48% from the field. And when you're not able, and with that skill set that you have, you're too small, too slow, not a good enough athlete, you better hit shots. And you're shooting at this rate, it's like, this is a catastrophe. Like, that's where the Bulls lose. Him and Shaq Harrison. I love Shaq's D, but that's where the team is just the delta. They're playing that guys in that second unit that really don't belong in the NBA. I think there's a good chance most of them don't. You know, what say you, Keith? We'll start with you, and then we'll go over to Buzz.
No, the depth on the team is definitely the problem. You know, the starting five is pretty competent, even with Robin Lopez there. We saw Zach LaVine tonight kind of turn it out in the second half in terms of facilitating. Lowry's been stepping it up as a playmaker. I think you can see Otto Porter Jr.'s really good at making the right basketball play more times than not. So I think we have a lot to build on here. And outside of Seldon, I don't really expect many players on our bench to be back except for Felicio and Blakeney, who are guaranteed. I actually wouldn't be surprised to see them cut Shaq at this point and add a legitimate big man, so Wayne Seldon isn't playing the power forward.
What say you, Buzz?
Oh, our bench is a bunch of G-leaguers. TLC, Ryan, what do you say, Archie, not the NBA? I do like Archie. I told you on one of the shows that we recorded prior that I do think that he is a point guard on a championship team. It might be a third or a fourth, but he's there. It may be in a suit or something, but he is there.
Yeah, he's on the G-League associated with whoever wins the title. Are you kidding me? He's not on a championship team. There's no he's not good enough to make the Golden State Warriors. He's not good enough to he's just not. He's a nice kid.
He would be the teacher. He'd be the guy in the suit that teaches grit and toughness to those players. Oh, but I think that Shaq Harrison, I mean, I think that he gave it a good shot. You know, but I, like Keith said, man, I'm just with Wayne Seldon being back next year. He's an RFA, right, Keith? So we can match whatever he gets, right?
That is correct. Spotrac said that he was an unrestricted free agent, but any player that has been in the league for 3 years or less and wasn't a first-round pick is a restricted free agent.
Right, so I could definitely see Seldon coming back. He's played some really good, as meaningful as they can be minutes for the Bulls this year. He's done real well. And outside of that, our starting five next year is going to look like pretty much what it looks like now, I would assume, you know, besides getting Wendell Carter Jr. back. And I've liked the last few games, I've really liked what I've seen out of the Bulls. So that's just where I stand with it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I still believe there's greatness here. And I know everyone snickering and listening to this is laughing, but I really believe it. I think the starters next year of, Wendell Carter Jr. at center, Lauri Markkanen in that power forward position, we got Otto Porter Jr. at the three. And right there is, I think, a great lineup for next season. And then LaVine at the two, and then whoever we decide on at the point guard position. Let's go into that right now. So it sounds like we're the final three guys left on Dunn Island. I got to admit, I got 1 foot in the boat, guys. I'm just so disappointed with overall with this play recently. Overall, I mean, people, I think, lost in this disaster of a season – he's improved in a lot of areas. He's, I think, shooting career highs at the three-point line, career highs with field goal percentage, assists per game. He's doing a lot of good things, but it's just not to the level that you want out of your starting point guard on a team that you really need to have a guy who's a facilitator to make other people better, and he's just not doing it. What say you?
Buzz, I'm not ready to jump off Chris Dunn's island, I guess. I mean, I'm there with you guys. I think that Chris Dunn can be an effective point guard in this league. I think he plays great defense. He averages 1.5 steals. The team averages 9. The unforced stats that he probably doesn't get on playing as good as defense as he plays. He's got a 13.0 PER, and as far as shooting goes, he's 34%, which is a career high from three-point land. He doesn't attempt a lot of them. I get it. 44% from field goal percentage, and he's, career high with 6.5 assists. I like Chris Dunn. The point guard position is something that's very hard to learn. He's dealt with injuries. He's dealt with injuries to teammates. He's still a young player, and I don't want to hear again that, oh, he's already 25 years old. I'm 27. I guess I'm dying next year, and I'm not going to be effective in life anymore. But Chris Dunn's not even started 82 games as a starter. He's at 72, actually, in his career. Or wait, I'm sorry, 79. 79 career starts he's had in his career. I'm not willing to give up on a player that plays very hard on both ends of the floor such as him, and he looks to get his teammates involved. He's averaging 9 assists after the All-Star break, so I'm gonna keep riding with them until I can't anymore, I guess.
Keith?
I think a lot of people flip-flop on Dunn a little too much. I hear a lot of he needs to shoot threes, and then when he shoots threes and he misses, people freak out. And then they say that he shoots too much. And then when all he does is pass and he takes 5 shots for the whole entire game, they freak out for that too. So I'm not ready to get off the Dunn train. To add on to what Buzz said, he's only played as a starter for 79 games. Since coming to the Bulls, there have been 49 different lineups. Obviously, he hasn't been a part of every single one of those lineups with his injuries.
Oh, but the 49.
Bulls, the Bulls have no chemistry or continuity in the last 2 years. He's had 3 coaches in 3 years while he's been in the league. So he really doesn't have a structure. He doesn't have the chemistry with Zach. And Zach is a very difficult shooting guard to kind of play alongside as a point guard because Zach does need the ball to be effective.
Yeah, good point.
So I think for what Dunn is, I don't know how you can be upset. The guy's putting up 12-7-5-2 as a complimentary guard as your third or fourth option on the team now that you have Otto Porter Jr. That's kind of what you want to see. Obviously, we need to see Dunn put more of it all together every night because it seems we either get the facilitating with less turnovers and a horrible shooting night, or we get a good shooting night and then he's clumsy with the ball and doesn't seem to get his assists. So Dunn just has to continue to put it together, but I'm not ready to give up on a guy that, is still on a rookie contract and is yet to play a full season as a starter in the NBA.
Yeah, on a positive, he's, to me, like, people sometimes make the argument he's not a good fit next to LaVine, which I disagree with quite a bit. I mean, you want a guy as good defensively as Dunn is next to LaVine, because LaVine is not a world beater on that end of the court, and Dunn can guard any two in the league. He's very versatile as a defender. I love his defense for the most part. And I think there's a lot of – I think he's gone through some personal issues. I know he had – everybody keeps alluding to this kind of very vaguely in interviews you'll see occasionally. Like, I know he had his first child. That's always a very difficult transition going through that. But, there's a lot of guys in the league that are going through that. So, on the negative parts, he's – and it, some people say, well, yeah, he's been injured a lot. But that's part – isn't part of durability part of the problem? He's had this issue going back to college. So – I understand both sides, right? I see it here. I without a doubt, the Bulls, to me, have to find a Patrick Beverley or Ricky Rubio, someone who can push Dunn for the starting position. And in doing so, hey, we're going to camp. It's going to be open. You're either going to earn the job or you're going to be the backup. And any way you look at it, it's a positive because you bring in a guy who's good enough to start, and Dunn becomes one of the best backups in the league, or Dunn rises to the occasion, earns a starting job, and you have one of the best backups in the league. It's just obvious to me that's got to happen. You got to find a point guard in free agency. Tonight, the Bulls, again, both the bench outscored 24-15. You know, Ryan Archer not in the NBA was a minus 14 or whatever. he's not a quality backup in the NBA. It's just a fact. And anybody who still wants to debate it is you're just wrong. He's at best a third string point guard. So, anyhow, let's move on. Any comments on those points I made? Do you guys agree, disagree? What do you think?
I agree. And to add to the Archie point, his only 2 points tonight were on a Giannis Antetokounmpo goaltend that he swatted on the way out. So that kind of tells you where Archie's at right now. Although he is in the top 10 of assist to turnover ratios in the NBA, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
well, he's also number one in grit. So
yeah,
got that.
And it, you know, that's the other thing too. Well, he's got great assist to turnover. He doesn't take any chances. He doesn't ever. Guys, it's not a bad thing to have turnovers. If you look at all the guys leading the league in turnovers, they're all guys that handle the ball. They're great players. Go look it up. It's, you know, Westbrook and LeBron. All those guys are in Harden. They're the guys leading the league because they handle the ball. They make great. You handle the ball a lot with great responsibility. Sometimes you're going to make mistakes, but you know this guy never wants to take a chance. It just irritates me sometimes these guys that the fan base just love. And he's such an, at best, barely average player, you know. Anyhow, and Shaq Harrison, God love him, his defense. His shooting is so horrendous and awful, I can't watch it anymore. He's one of the few guys I've ever seen, you know the ball's missed within 2 feet. Like, you literally see it, you know. It's like, that's off. That's off by about, you know, 6 feet or whatever. The guy's just terrible. Wayne Seldon, God bless him, 2-for-10 tonight, 0-for-3 from three. He's another guy everybody's celebrating. He's great. And I do like him. I like him. At best, he's a backup 2 or 3. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, Wayne Seldon I don't think that he's going to be like a sixth man off the bench or anything. I just think that he could be a very good rotational piece on how he, you know, with the way he plays. Wayne Seldon came in and I watched him a lot at Kansas. I'm a big Jayhawk guy, and you know why, Fred, because the captain.
I'm sorry to hear that. Go on. It's a shame.
But I thought Wayne Seldon came in and's done pretty well, and I'd like to see what, you know, else he could do with a little bit of stability in his NBA life.
Yeah. One of these days we should have a show exclusively on Kirk's senior year when he went 6-for-20 in the championship game and lost to freshman Melo in Syracuse. But
do you remember last time how you hated on Machado going to the White Sox? Now you're just going to kick me in the nuts again about Kirk in the championship game.
At least they signed all Machado's buddies, so that's you're gonna have that going for you. So when he comes to town, he'll be able to go out with his friends. Timothy Luwawu Cabaret, what do you guys think of him? I'm not very high on him. I don't know. What's your take on him? Is he going to be on the spot next year? Or is this one of the guys just helping the tank?
I sure the hell hope not. I think he's helping the tank. I mean, he went negative in the plus-minus. He went minus 19 tonight. You know,
16 minutes, I know. I know.
He has. You know what's, like, crazy to me? He's not athletic at all. You know, I thought he would be. You know, I mean, going back to his debut here where he missed that dunk, and I feel like he jumped as high as I could probably jump up off the ground. You know, I'm not seeing a lot of good things. I thought he'd be a better wing defender as well. I'm just not seeing a lot of good things out of him. If he's here, he's here. If he's not, he's not. Because I would assume next year too, with a young, you know, high draft pick, it's still going to be some, you know, learning curves and stuff like that. But I mean, if he's here next year, he is. If he's not, he's not. It's not really going to break my heart either way.
What say you, Keith?
I think it's just free wing depth that the Bulls got paid to take on, and with it being our, you know, most depleted spot until we added Otto Porter Jr., it really doesn't hurt. I think Seldon will probably be a good option to be the third small forward on the roster. You know, Otto Porter, Hutch, then Seldon. I think if Seldon is the third small forward on your roster, you have some solid depth. But TLC is just here because he was free, and they need some size and versatility to throw out there without any power forwards other than Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, and we'll get into the addition of depth momentarily with draft picks. We got our draft expert on the show in Buzz here. But Lauri Markkanen, one more thing on him. So I came out with a tweet. I saw several people stole it about how Lauri Markkanen has 5 30-point games. I think today was his 33rd or 34th game. He's got 5 30-plus games. All six guys picked ahead of him had a total of 3. Tatum had 1, and Fox had 2. So And then I heard Nick Friedel earlier this week say that he's really regressed, and I'm like, what is this guy? Why? I understand he's out in Golden State and he's not paying as much attention anymore, but are people aware of how good Lauri Markkanen is and he's progressing? I know he had an awful game tonight, 6 of 21, 1 of 7 from 3, and that's where his biggest issue is with me, is like he's not shooting the 3 as nearly as well as I think he can. He has too many games like tonight, 1 of 7, he's had a few 1 of 5s recently. When that starts getting more consistent, this guy's going to be unstoppable. 7 of 7 again from the line, he's rebounding at a high rate, at 17 boards a night. I love him. And that's the only reason I'd keep Lopez on, is because I do feel like Lopez does help him immensely, taking the harder front court matchups. And, you know, if you're throwing Fleishy out there, gosh, I think you might actually hinder development of Lauri Markkanen. And I understand the need to buy out Lopez so he can go play in Golden State. Everybody's on that bandwagon. But I do feel like Lopez does help Markkanen. What say you?
I'd have to agree. I'm kind of confused how you can say Lauri Markkanen is regressing if he's up to 18.4 points per game and 8.7 rebounds by the end of the year. At this rate, he's going to be a 20-10 player. And the consistency with his three-point shot, I feel, can be a lot better. I think he's capable of doing much more, and he's already shooting 38%. So that's not really anything to sniff your nose at. On the Rolo front, I can understand with the tank kind of movement why you'd buy him out, and the mutual benefit for Rolo to go get a championship ring, but I have to agree. Rolo has value to this team. The way the odds are set up, the Bulls really shouldn't have to try to tank with their lack of depth. They should be able to compete like we've seen the last few nights, still come out with a loss, but get positive development with players like Otto Porter Jr. and Rolo around the younger guys. So I don't know what to do. I'd be fine with it either way, but I do think Rolo has value to this team.
What say you, Buzz?
Oh, besides tonight, the last 7 games, Lauri Markkanen, 23.4 points per game, 13.6 rebounds per game, and 6 double-doubles. Including tonight, Lauri has had 7 double-doubles in the last 8 games. Nick Friedel is a Chicago Bulls hater, and that's why I am blocked from him on Twitter. He blocked me. Because I don't, you know, me and Nick Friedel don't get along very well.
Apparently not. What did you say that caused the block? What was the... I like Nick. I like Nick a lot.
It was years ago, Fred. I mean, I'm talking before the podcast and stuff, is when we had like an online radio show back in the day. And I was interning at one of the local radio stations here in Chicago. But he had said something about an opinion of mine on Luol Deng. And I responded to him to go paint his body back orange and, you know, go cheer for Syracuse or something. Like, I made fun of Syracuse or something, and then he blocked me. So, I don't know. It was something like that. But I don't understand how you can say he regressed. I think that is just an ignorant statement. He is playing lights out, and it's not even close. It's not even close. I mean, he's been having great games, and yeah, he didn't have a great shooting night tonight, but he did a lot of other things out on the court. You know, he had 3 assists tonight. He had, you know, like I said, his 7th double-double in 8 games. He went 20 points, 17 rebounds, 2 steals. You know, I mean, the guy played good. He had a, you know, finished in a -5 and a plus-minus, but he played a good game. Lauri has not regressed. And as far as, I think he's gotten better, actually, in the games that we've seen him in this year. And then as far as Rolo goes, I think Rolo is a good veteran presence for, you know, this team. And, you know, he, I'm sure he does help out Lauri in a way. It complements Lowry's game because Rolo, you know, usually isn't hanging out where Lauri is. Rolo's a back to the basket kind of guy, while you have Lauri being a face up 4. I think it helps him out for sure. As far as Rolo being a part of the future of the core, I mean,
yeah,
all those things must end eventually, you know. I mean, he's not, I don't think he's a part of the future by any means necessary.
I wouldn't mind bringing him back next year as a backup. You're going to need to find a backup 4 or 5 to these two guys, right? If we don't get Zion, you know, we don't get somebody in the draft, I think absolutely you need to bring a big guy in, you know, on a 1-year or 2-year contract just to back them up at the power forward center position. Maybe some guy. I wouldn't mind bringing him back. Definitely not at the number he's at now, but I love Rolo. I think he's a great leader for the team. He's a great example, and I think he helps. He clearly has helped Wendell Carter Jr. Wendell Carter Jr. said it, you know, many times, and I don't think he's a bad guy at all to have on the team. It's a tough call. Like, I think people underestimate how much better or how like a player like Rolo helps the development of guys on this team. He's a great pick setter. That's an underrated trait. You know, anyhow, it's just something that people don't think about. They just like, oh, just throw, you know, Fleishy out there. Well, if you're hurting the progress of Larry Markkanen, that's not a great thing, you know. Anyhow, I do want to mention, you know, real briefly, too, Nick Friedel. I love Nick. I think he's a great guy. But his hatred for some of his comments on the Bulls, he's had criticism. I don't know how many times I've heard him criticize them for, you know, Marcus Teague at 29. You know, you can't criticize a team for missing on the 29th pick because most 29th picks are missed. That's not a great and, you know, I understand that was the draft with Draymond Green, you know, in the second round.
Will Barton as well. That's who I wanted to get out of Memphis that year.
Sure.
Well, and Golden State still drafted Festus Ezeli at 30 before they drafted Draymond Green.
That's exactly right. And the brilliant Danny Ainge needed a power forward center. And a man as brilliant as Danny Ainge took Fab Melo and Fat Sullinger in, with two picks in the first round. So, you know, every GM missed on Draymond Green, and you don't criticize, continually bring up missing with the 29th pick, because more often than not, you're going to miss with the 29th pick.
Right.
The 13 out of the 15 All-NBA players were picked in the top 10 picks. That's where the stars are found. And if you got to hit on those picks, and whatever people want to criticize Chicago Bulls about, they hit on 87.5% of their first top 10 picks. And I'm talking about homers, not even high top 10 picks. Noah, Rose, and I think Wendell Carter Jr. and Larry Markkanen are absolute homers. Would you rather have them, or would you rather be the Orlando Magic drafting Mo Bamba and Jonathan Isaac with the picks before him the last 2 years? What duo would you rather have? I think the choice is clear. Let's talk about, though, the draft, the upcoming draft. So we have Buzz, who's our expert here, on some of the guys to pick in this upcoming draft. And this is a point I made with Waddle and Sylvie is today, actually, is they're really, you know, really upset about the Bulls not maximizing the chances for a top pick. And I understand it. I understand the point, too. And I kind of countered with, in every draft, you know, Markkanen right now, if you redrafted it, would have been probably the fourth, third, or fourth pick. In every draft, you got a guy picked at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 who really belonged in the top three or top two or top, you know, even number one, right? So I really believe that's going to happen this year. When all said and done, 4 or 5 years down the road, we'll look back and say, wow, that guy was a steal at 6, 7, 8, or 9. So it's a crapshoot, you know. Ideally, we'd like to have a number one overall pick and take Zion and an RJ second, but I think there's going to be great players available wherever they pick. They're going to have a high pick, period. So let's talk about some of those other players that aren't being discussed. Right now, it's pretty clear the 1, 2, 3 is probably Zion, RJ, and Morant, and we already talked about Zion and RJ, who I think are clearly the 1-2. Are there any other guys out there that you like, Buzz, that we should be watching over as we get into March Madness?
Absolutely. So one thing before people kill me on your podcast, I love college basketball, and I've never been called an expert before, so you just made my night. Thank you. But anyway, right. But on top of that, Fred, what you had just said with Zion and RJ being 1 and 2, that is not the general consensus throughout like college basketball media here. Ja Morant has moved into number 2, and it's almost solely on every mock draft I read. And
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah,
are you serious?
It's on most of them, dude. It's on most of them.
Well, I've seen them both play, and there's no way in a million years I'd take Morant ahead of RJ Barrett. And
yeah,
I understand
Barrett's
not shooting great, and I understand he's starting to come on. I know he had a couple of really good games recently. But you look at the kid, he's 18, and you look at that body, and you look at his skill set, that's exactly what the NBA is becoming, right? Why would you not want that kid?
Yeah, I'm in the camp. Now, if I'm the Bulls, right, if I'm the Chicago Bulls, which is my team, if I'm them, if I can't get Zion, I'm looking at Cam Reddish, I'm looking at RJ Barrett, I'm looking at Romeo Langford. I like those guys a lot, And I know Romeo Langford has kind of fallen. He does play at Indiana, but he's a very good player. I don't want to sleep on Kevin Porter as well, because I don't know how long-term Otto Porter Jr. is going to be in the mix. I mean, he could, you know, he could ride out this contract. He could become something huge within the starting lineup and be here for a while. I don't know, but I was looking at more scouting, more small forward slash shooting guards, and the ones that I've come across that I would like to see in a Bulls uniform next year is either RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, Kevin Porter, Romeo Langford, or Nazir Little from North Carolina as well. I like those guys. I know he's not as flashy as people would like, and his numbers don't reflect huge, but I think he's going to be a very good player in the NBA. As far as that, I think there's a fall off. I know everybody likes Ja Morant a lot, but I just don't. I don't see it. I don't see it with Ja Morant. And I know a lot of people are like, "Well, he's averaging, you know, 10.4 assists a game, and he's the man." There's this thing in college basketball, and it's on stats. If I don't know if any of you guys check out the sports reference websites like Basketball Reference and stuff like that. I live on those websites like every day. There's a strength of schedule stat. It's called SOS. In this great year by Ja Morant, where he's averaging 23.9 points a game with 10.1 assists, 2 steals, and how many rebounds? 5.4 rebounds. His strength of schedule is negative 4.81.
Okay. Well, what is that relative to the, you know, like Duke or the rest of the league?
Zion Williamson is, his strength of schedule is, I believe it's 10.8.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, that's why how this guy Morant performs in the tournament is so important. I mean, you really need to see him perform well when all the eyeballs are on him, when the pressure, the lights are up hot. You need to see him perform. You need to see him do well. And I agree with you. I do feel like that's rarely ever counted well. It's kind of and then you get guys like Doug McDermott who dominated his league, and, you know, we can go on and on. I mean, our favorite campaign. So,
fellow Murray State point guard, along with Isaiah Cannon. Yeah, the Bulls don't have a good track record with those guys.
Like, I think like a guy like, I remember in 2017, I brought this up the day before the draft, and I brought up the Bulls picking John Collins at 16. Well, the trade happened, and, you know, John Collins fell to, you know, I think it was 19 with Atlanta.
Yep.
And John Collins played in the ACC, played for Wake Forest, and he was fantastic in that league. And I heard several people I respect, scouts, that really liked him. And he just fell because, you know, the ACC was so stacked and so difficult that you kind of fall a little bit under the radar. If John Collins was playing in the MAC, he would have dominated that conference.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely dominated. So, I don't know. What say you, Keith? You want to jump in on some of your thoughts here, what Buzz said?
There's another point guard that you'll hear a lot of people talking about on Twitter, and that's Darius Garland.
He
went to Vanderbilt. He tore his meniscus, so he's kind of just rehabbing and prepping for the draft. He'll be ready for the combine. But he's more of your shot creator. He's kind of like your Trae Young of this year. Great outside shooter. I believe he was shooting close to 50% from three-point in his 5 games. But he also did have more turnovers than assists, and I don't think he's going to be a very competent defender. So I think the two best point guards in this draft kind of have either similar flaws to Chris Dunn, or their flaws may outweigh their benefits on this team next to Zach LaVine, which would kind of further Buzz's point of kind of focusing on the wings. I don't know if that's what the Bulls are doing, but that is what I would personally be doing. As Stacey King was pointing out tonight, Zach LaVine can be a solid point guard.
Exactly.
He can do a lot of the things that James Harden can because he draws so much attention. And if Zach can continue to improve on his playmaking, who's to say that Zach LaVine isn't our point guard? And then you add an RJ Barrett or a Cam Reddish with an Otto Porter Jr., and you just have Zach LaVine and a whole bunch of 6'7 to 6'8 guys that can shoot the damn ball in Wendell Carter Jr. I think that's a lot of the way that the league's moving, that it would have a lot of versatility. I think Zach at the point guard spot also probably would be more engaged on the defensive end if he is initially on the ball handler to start the possession. So I think there's a lot of benefits to Zach at the point guard position, and I think that's something that the Bulls have to keep in mind with the best player available. That's RJ Barrett. Just because you think you need a point guard, you have Rondo, Collison, Rubio, Beverly, all really good veterans in free agency that you have $15 to $20 million in cap to go get them. So I think the Bulls need to stick with best available and not fall into fit, which is weird for me to say because I am generally a person that feels that fit is very important to a player's potential with a team. But in this scenario, I don't think you can go wrong adding the best wing player available.
You see, that's exactly what I was going to say there, Keith, too, before I got sidetracked there. Is like that was my point. People are saying that Ja Morant he's this freak athletically. He gets all of his teammates involved. He can do all this stuff. Well, guess who else is a freak athletically and a way better shooter than him and already on our roster? That's Zach LaVine. You know, like this guy tonight had 7 assists. He was, I think, the only player on our team. No, there's 2 other players that finished with a plus, plus and the plus minus. But Zach can do this. Zach can play point guard. He keeps improving. Every facet of his game, he's improving. There's no reason he can't play point guard. And I just don't think, as a Bulls fan and looking, because usually I'm with you, dude, I usually go with, you know, who's going to fit the team better. But I don't think that you can pass up on an RJ Barrett or a Cam Reddish if you're at 2 or 3. I think that you're crazy. Any franchise would be crazy, and we'll, you know, tweet at freezing cold takes if I'm wrong here. I cannot see that a franchise passing on one of those 2 players for Ja Morant.
It's funny that you guys mentioned this, because I had a tweet on February 8th that I got a lot of heat for, and it said, I'll read it right now. It said, I just had a vision of Wendell Carter Jr. at the 5, Laurie at the 4, Zion at the 3, Porter at the 2, LaVine at the 1. It would revolutionize basketball and basically be a quote-unquote small lineup with guys who happen to be very large. The league would cower in fear. Please, Providence, make it so. And that was kind of my point, is like all those guys are such good athletes that I mentioned that I think it's like it is kind of like quote-unquote going small with guys that are just huge. You know what I mean? Like they're so good athletically. And LaVine can be that guy at the 1. It's not like he's never played the point guard position. I understand people are like, well, imagine him defensively. Yeah, I get it too. But you also got to think sometimes out the effect of a lineup like that in the other end. And I'm certain after watching Zion now, like people are making a big deal about he's a 4. He is so good athletically, I think he could be a 3. Like, he's that good that I'm not really worried about him at all. And then, you know, but think about that, having, like, Wendell Carter Jr., Laurie, Zion, and Porter out there. All those guys are pretty good athletes and long and tall. I mean, is that insane? Is that insane to throw that out there and say, yeah, that's not going to work?
No, that's not insane at all.
That's actually a great tweet. I'm upset I missed that because that's actually a pretty good one. I agree with everything that you said on there. I really do.
That's the exact direction that the league is moving. It is all about versatility and being able to do everything. And I think if you can have all 2-way players on the floor with LaVine and Markkanen, and they can all space the floor as well, I think you're cooking with gas. And to the LaVine point, NBCS Bulls shared a fun stat today that Zach LaVine is the first Chicago Bull to have 25 points and 5 assists at least for 4 straight games since Derrick Rose in the 2011 playoffs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. Back to really quick about Porter, because we didn't talk about this. What do you guys think about the trade? I'd love to get, let's start with you, Keith, on this one, and then we'll go to you, Buzz. I know you weren't as high as I was. I mean, again, just for the people who haven't heard it yet, I feel like a guy of Porter's skill level, and he's highly skilled. He's got great advanced metrics. Is it worth about $17 to $20 million a year? That's where you're going to pay for a guy like that. So, yeah, he's overpaid. But luckily, our starting 4 in Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. are going to be paid $10.5 million combined for the next 2 years. You know, per year, $10.5 million. So, when you big picture, you're going to have your starting 4, 5, 4, and 3 making about $40 million. That's not a ton. And I think those guys, I think Otto Porter Jr. is really going to help complement Markkanen well and make him better and make him easier to achieve his ceiling. What say you?
I say that you are spot on, and I find it funny when Bulls fans like to laugh at Paxson and because he said Otto Porter's on our timeline. You just pointed out exactly why Otto Porter is on their timeline, because his contract technically expires the year that Lauri Markkanen will have to be paid. So that money clears up, and it's not entirely unrealistic to think that Otto Porter Jr. might take the $8 million he's owed off the top and extend himself for $20 million a year long term. Maybe he likes it here. Maybe he wants to stay here. And for the Bulls, they were being realistic. Looking at the free agency class, they saw it and they were like, hey, you know, our best case scenario is probably a max contract to Middleton or Tobias Harris. And Tobias Harris just got traded to the 76ers. Middleton is really close with Giannis, and Milwaukee is all about keeping Giannis happy because he's coming up to free agency soon. So I can't see those players getting, you know, outbid by other teams, and if they like their situation, they're going to stay there. So it's very possible the Bulls felt the same way, and they took advantage of a situation where the Wizards were no longer willing to eat Otto Porter's contract because John Wall's going to be out for 14 months after tearing his Achilles at his house. So I think the Bulls really took a good situational leap. Initially, I wasn't as thrilled with it because we gave away a pick, although it was protected to 36 and it's only a second-round pick. I was hoping because of the horrible contract that maybe they would have gotten the second instead of giving it up. But outside of that, after processing what actually happened, I think it's a brilliant move.
What say you?
You know, at first I was pretty irritated about it, and there's a couple reasons I was irritated about it. It was the contract. That's something that I don't like. He's way overpaid, but, you know, I've kind of come to terms with that. It's whatever. You know, obviously it's not my money. It's just the Bulls' money, so it is what it is. Another reason I was irritated about it was because all that Ja Morant talk that is happening right now, I really hope the Bulls don't pick off of need and they actually pick off of raw talent that's there. And I was scared because all this talk with Chris Dunn not being the future point guard, or if they're not thinking that Zach LaVine can play point guard like we're discussing right now, it just scared me because I'm like, are we going to really pass up on a Zion? Or, you know, obviously if we got number one, I doubt we pass up on Zion, but or an RJ Barrett or a Cam Reddish. It made me nervous, but now as time has gone on, kind of like he said, I'm good with it, especially hearing the news after that Bobby Portis was not going to re-up with the team. You know, they offered him, you know, I heard from a little birdie that I talked to about the Bulls every once in a while that Bobby did not want to sign in, or the Bulls weren't going to match an offer sheet, I'm sorry, for him because he just wanted too much money for what the Bulls were willing to pay him. And then with Jabari Parker, you know, obviously I think he needed to change his scenery immediately because I just don't think that he had the best experience here in Chicago. Mentally, I think that was really rough on him. So getting Otto Porter back and the little thing, he's a very good defender. Kid could shoot the three. He's averaging about 18 points a game in the three games that he's been here. He's playing well. You know, he's shooting 60% from downtown with a 54% field goal percentage since he's been here, 18 points a game. And three boards and one assist. So he's been doing well, and I can't be mad about it. He does make this lineup a little bit more fun.
You know, I've heard a lot of people. I was on record saying I thought the treatment of Parker was a mistake. I think it's going to have negative ramifications. But the idea that that doesn't happen on any other teams is just absolutely ludicrous. I mean, look at Enes Kanter with the Knicks and that whole situation. All you got to do is Google it. It's a disaster. You know, having Porzingis, do you think that Knicks traded him? Well, there's no ramifications for that. How they basically dumped on him on his way out the door. It's so ludicrous and ridiculous that everybody's like talking like the Knicks are a better situation than the Bulls right now. I think it's absolutely asinine. I mean, they basically bet everything on that they're going to get two guys in. And, you know, I think it's probably going to be Jimmy Butler and Boogie Cousins are the two guys they sign. If it's better than that, you know, so be it. But I don't want Jimmy Butler from 30 to 35 on a max deal. I think that's why Philly took, you know, I think Philly believes that too. You know, they're going to go for it this year, and we'll see where that ends up. To close this up, I do want to talk a little bit, but I mean, now that the teams are there, you know, the Celtics are struggling. Philadelphia's got a revamped lineup, obviously, with some interesting pieces that they added. And we have Milwaukee adding Nico. In Toronto, obviously, adding Gasol. Out of those four teams in the East, who do you guys like the best right now going forward, and who do you think is most likely going to represent the Eastern Conference? Buzz, we'll start with you.
Toronto. I think Toronto, man. I mean, Lowry, Kawhi Leonard, Marc Gasol. I mean, that team's – they're no slouches over there. I think they have a really good team. And with, I mean, Boston could do a complete turnaround from now until the playoffs as well. I know Mr. Morris had commented the other day about how everybody plays for themselves and not for the team. They're still playing pretty decent basketball, and they're still up there in the standings, obviously. Philadelphia, I'm still confused on how that works. You know, they're playing good basketball as well. Joel Embiid's on another level. Obviously, they just add Tobias Harris. You have, Ben Simmons and Jimmy. That's a pretty good team, and Milwaukee's good as well. But if I had to put my money on it, I'm going to say I think Toronto. I think that Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Lowry, and Marc Gasol are going to make some noise over there and probably represent the Eastern Conference this year, barring any injury.
Keith, what say you?
I'm kind of rolling with Philly. I think that a lot of what they did at the deadline is going to help them. They added some solid depth in Mike Scott, Jonathan Simmons from the Magic, who was originally with the Spurs. Maybe they get Zaire Smith, their first-round pick this year, back. Boban to back up Embiid is kind of fun. I'd really love to see that practice session because that would just be a good time. The best name in the NBA, Furkan Korkmaz. He's a pretty solid shooter. They picked up James Ennis from the Rockets, who's another kind of versatile wing player. So I think they added a good amount of depth, and it's hard to, outside of Golden State, say that there's a better starting five than Redick, Butler, Simmons, Embiid, and Tobias Harris.
I agree 100% with you, Keith. I even stated, I love Tobias Harris. I love his shooting ability, and that's exactly what they needed, right, to have a guy out there that could stretch the floor and pull big men out, Tobias Harris, that acquisition. But I do feel like I think they can actually win it all. I think they can beat Golden State if Jimmy Butler is willing to stop demanding to be the alpha and to embrace the role as beta man. And I don't think he's going to be willing to do that. I think they will get out of the East. They probably won't beat Golden State because of that. But those are my two favorite teams, is Toronto and Philly. And I think Philly's got them. As long as they stay healthy, I think they got them beat. You know, when you get in the playoffs, you're not going to go 9-10 deep. Everybody talks about depth.
You know, it's about 7-8 deep in the
exactly,
playoffs.
Exactly. And Philly's got it, man. I love that team. I really do. Elton Brand's done a absolutely fantastic home run job. And, I think that's going to be – I can't wait. I can't wait for the second round. I mean, having Milwaukee, Boston, and well, right now, if it's 4-5, I think, is Philly and Boston. It's amazing how Indiana's still winning. I think they won 4 or 5 in a row. Somebody told me that recently, and I couldn't believe it. I thought they were going to go right down the toilet. Wes Matthews' pickup was huge. But, I do kind of feel that by the end of the year, they'll probably fall out of that top four, and it will be a top four of some form or fashion of Milwaukee, the Sixers, Toronto and Boston in that second round. Oh my gosh, it's gonna be awesome. Absolutely awesome. It's been a long time since you had four teams that are that close, I think, in the East. Guys, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation. We're already over 40 minutes. Thanks again for jumping on Chicago Bullseye. Buzz, you've kind of brought me some solace in the fact that I'm not worried if the Bulls are 1-7. Ideally, I'd love to see him get Zion. But, even if they don't, I still feel pretty good about the future of this team. And maybe it is a little bit deeper than 1 out of 3.
So. Yeah, I'm glad I could make you feel better, man. I just, like I said, if you guys, I know we're going to record many podcasts together from now until the draft. But if they draft Ja Morant, you're going to have to put me on the back of milk cartons because I'm running away. I'm not going to watch that train wreck.
I'm not going to go that. It won't be bad. You have Morant competing with Dunn for the point guard, starting point guard position. It'll be exciting and fun. And we got everything else taken care of from the 2 spot to the 5. You got Valentine coming back. It's going to be a great year. I can't wait. What say you, Keith?
Oh, no, I'm definitely excited for next year. I think whether our starting five involves Chris Dunn or not, if Chris Dunn isn't our starter, that means that we have somebody that is clearly better than Chris Dunn, which means our starting lineup is going to be really good. And if Chris Dunn's still on our team, that means that we're going to have some solid depth at the point guard spot, too. So yeah. I'm really excited about next year, and I'm excited about the draft because it is top-heavy with a lot of wing talent, which is where the league is moving. The more versatile 6'7 to 6'8 guys that you have on your team that can guard and play offense, the better off you are.
Guys, it's been a blast. Have a great evening. I'm looking forward to Machado signing with the Yankees and then talking to you, Buzz, for many days. It's going to be fun to get your reaction, your opinion to the White Sox doing a great job signing every one of Machado's buddies and Machado signing with the Yankees.
That is the second one in a row you've done this to me on, Fred. I'm just, see, now put me on the milk carton. That happens too. Put me on a milk carton.
I love
I'm
tired you, brother. I love you. But we'll see. Maybe they will get him. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe the White Sox will get him. Any way you look at it, I don't think it's a bright future on the South side. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. All right, guys.
Man.
On that note, it's if it ain't Bulls, ain't basketball, talk again soon.
All right. Take care, Fred.
Take it easy, guys.
Take it easy.